Hi, this is Colin McGill from Dartmouth Lacrosse. You're listening to the D Fly and Dixie podcast.
Welcome back to the D Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group. Featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analysts, and my old Blue Jay buddy, Mark Dixon. I am the host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, great show on tap this week. We have an important midweek result to talk about. Of course, we'll preview the biggest games this week, and we'll talk to standout Dartmouth attackman Colin McGill as he and the Big Green get set to tangle with the Princeton Tigers this Saturday. Dixie, let's get it. Dixie, I got to give you a compliment. I want to give a shout out to your range as a professional broadcaster. Flip on my TV on Sunday morning, and you're doing a play-by-play for a women's lacrosse game, Hopkins versus Rutgers in Baltimore. And then later, I turn on my, flipping back and forth between NCAA basketball and the Big Ten game of the week, and you're doing the analyst role on a men's game, State College, Pennsylvania. What range? What range? But I understand there's a little controversy coming out of that broadcast of the Penn State Ohio State game.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the kind words. I often don't get them from you. So thank you very much. Yeah, had a great time doing Hopkins Rutgers with Sheehan Stanwyck Birch, and then made the trek up 83 to State College to call Sunday night on Big Ten Network. Man, it's so much fun to call those games and to have that slot and the excitement that it generates, the interest that it generates. And it turned out to be a pretty good game. Not the best game. Ohio State just played fantastic. But you mentioned the biggest thing that came out of that game was the use of replay. There was a shot by Penn State that was not called a goal on the field, and then Jeff Tambroni threw the challenge flag, and officials went to review it, and it was clear on our looks and our replays that it was a goal. That the ball, I mean, I think Joe Beninati, my broadcast partner, said that ball's a foot behind the goal line, and then the officials came back and didn't change the call, and they showed the replay then on the big screen at Panzer Stadium, and the crowd just lost it. Jeff Tambroni was pretty emotional in the moment. And so that was that. And we come to find out that replay the officials were looking at was not what we had on broadcast, but rather all schools use something called score break.
All schools use score break, or did some of them use TV feeds or video board feeds?
I have been educated through various conversations with leadership within NILOA, as well as having conversations with several college coaches and fellow officials, that everyone is required to have score break. Now, I'm not familiar with that application, but I guess I don't know if there are packages that you can upgrade quality or internet packages that you can upgrade in quality. So I don't want to misspeak, because talking with these people, like, this school has better replay capability than this school does, and this school has this, and this school doesn't have that. So apparently the officials were treated to a very grainy, very hard to see replay, which is brutal. We got to get this improved. We have to get this right. I love instant replay. I think it's terrific. But if situations like what happened on Sunday, if that's the way it's going to be, then why the heck are we using this resource? So in any event, the officials did not have the view that we had. So therefore, it was inconclusive, and they were not able to change the call, which would have been the correct call. And I don't think it would have changed the outcome of the game based on what we saw. Ohio State just played fantastic. But that definitely killed momentum for Penn State in that situation. And it's just unfortunate because it was on national television. It was an awesome atmosphere at Panzer. The place was packed, it was loud. Both student section or but the Penn State student section was in full force. The parents were into it, and the fans were into it. And these kids were just gutting it out, making plays all over the field. It's just unfortunate. So we've got to get this fixed.
Yeah, I will say, as a fan watching, that is the most frustrating thing when you see it replayed on TV multiple times and it's clear what the answer is. And I'm not, even if you're an impartial fan, like I understand I can watch a Ravens game and I'll see a replay and I want to see it a certain way sometimes and it just doesn't work out the way my brain wants it to be. But when you're watching it as an impartial observer, and you're like, oh, that's a goal. And then the refs look at what you think is the same thing, and then they come back and don't change their mind. It's the most frustrating thing as a fan, and I understand people's anger about it. And then those clips come right from the TV, and they go right on the social media, and then it just generates a complete problem. And I don't understand why schools aren't able to pull their TV video board feed. Like, you would upgrade it if, okay, so we don't have, everybody is streaming everything all the time. And a Big Ten school should be able to have that capability, because they're putting, if that game wasn't broadcast live on Big Ten Network, it would have been streaming on Big Ten Plus, right? So I don't know. It's really frustrating.
Well, so you hit on a good point. ESPN Plus broadcast, Big Ten Plus, they don't incorporate the resources that we do on network games like an ESPNU or any other ESPN channel. Or, like, for instance, Sunday on Big Ten Network, we've got high definition, we've got super slow-mo. I mean, we've got resources. You don't have those on a typical stream. But the quality still should be better, especially for the replay situation. But it goes back to what a very famous lacrosse coach has said to me and said to us on many, many occasions. Lacrosse is, it's just a pimple on the elephant's butt, and it's a non-revenue sport. So while it's incredibly important to folks like me, you, the fans, the players, the coaches, in the scheme of college athletics, it's not football, it's not basketball, it's a non-revenue sport. So a lot of times the resources are treated as such. And that's just a fact. That's not an indictment. That's just a fact. And it's economics, it's reality. We get it all the time with broadcasting. Why don't you guys do more D3? Or why don't you do any D3? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? It's money, honey. Plain and simple. And the other thing that we have to keep in mind, as much as all of us love the sport of lacrosse, when it comes to eyeballs, the sad reality in our world, not in general, because I don't mind softball, softball rates through the roof compared to lacrosse. College baseball, in a lot of ways, rates through the roof. College wrestling, and I love all three of those sports. I'm not trying to dump on them. That's just that's the sad reality as a lacrosse fan, that lacrosse just doesn't get the viewership and the interest that other sports do. And that's a variety of reasons. We could talk about that all day long, but that's the reality of it. And that's where we are right now as a sport. And hopefully it gets better as time goes on. But our current situation, you have things that can happen like happened on Sunday night at State College.
One time a year when there's always eyeballs on the lacrosse world is NCAA championship weekend. And we have a deal for our fans. The men's and women's NCAA championship weekends are heading back to Gillette Stadium, held jointly for the first time since 2017. From May 23rd to May 26th, there's nowhere else in the lacrosse world to be than Foxborough, Massachusetts, for eight of the best and most impactful games of the season, including the men's and women's D1 championships and semifinals, and the D2 and D3 finals on Sunday. And we have a deal for our listeners. This year, Inside Lacrosse is proud to partner with the NCAA to offer you, our loyal listeners, $5 off all single day ticket options by using the code ILPOD at checkout. So head to ncaa.com/laxtickets and enter ILPOD at checkout to purchase your tickets. That's ILPOD and save $5 off your tickets. Once again, go to ncaa.com/laxtickets and use the promo code ILPOD for our DFLY and Dixie loyal listeners to save $5 off your tickets. Dixie, there was one very significant midweek game involving top 20 teams in Battle of the Charles River, I think they call it. Number 17, Boston University, and number 13, Harvard met on Tuesday night. The Crimson come away with a 16-7 win, and they put this one away early. I think it was 12-3 at halftime.
Sure. No, look, Harvard, that was a game I thought it was going to be more a little closer. I only watched the first quarter, admittedly, because Harvard just played with a ton of confidence. And after losing to Princeton last weekend, they came out on fire. This looks like a much different Harvard team that I watched against Colgate earlier in the season. So they've made drastic improvement. BU's a good team, and they had momentum coming off of a tough overtime win against Army this past weekend. But I want to give, speaking of ESPN Plus, I want to give a shout out to the Harvard broadcast because so there's four schools in that little corridor in Boston: Harvard, BU, Boston College, and Northeastern. Boston University prides itself on, of those four schools, they're the only ones that has a Boston zip code. That is a selling point that they, and a pride point for BU. I think they're only a mile and a half away, Harvard and Boston University. And the open, they had a graphic that was computerized and it took you from Nickerson Field to where BU plays. And then they did like a sky over, like a drone flight over to Jordan Field. I thought it was really cool, and very well done. But again, I watched the first quarter. Harvard was dominant and they're playing at a high level right now.
Yeah, big win for the Crimson, and gives them the title of the champions of Beantown.
Yeah.
Dixie, there are five top 20 matchups that highlight the schedule this week. So let's get to the game previews. First on Saturday, this is a big non-conference game that I've had circled for a while. Lost a little bit of its luster when the Army Black Knights lost last week to bump their undefeated season, but number five, North Carolina, who's 7-1, will travel up to New York to play number nine Army, 7-1 now. This game is at noon on ESPN Plus. It's a really important opportunity for Army to get a key quality win. Oh, and it's only the third time all year that the Tar Heels will travel out of the state of North Carolina to play a game. So big road game for the Heels.
Carolina's enjoyed home cooking this season. A lot of games at Dorrance Field, and their last contest was at High Point, which is only about an hour away from Chapel Hill. They've already gone on the road, beaten Johns Hopkins. They'll go to Army, and then they have a trip later in the season back to the state of New York to play Syracuse. But this is a Carolina team that is playing good lacrosse right now. They've had three dominant victories: Hofstra, Jacksonville, and High Point. So this will be a step up, I think, in competition. A step up in intensity, and they're going to have a big advantage, I think, at the faceoff dot with Brady Wambach, who's playing great. And that's where Army has struggled a little bit, as Will Colletti has missed the last few games for Army, including their loss to BU this past weekend at home. So the cadets are going to be buzzing, but the Tar Heels are focused as well on this one. They know what this game means, and for Army, coming in, this time last week, I think their closest game had been a six-goal win over Lehigh, 9-3. Now all of a sudden, they're in a tough spot because who knows what's going to happen in the Patriot League tournament. They're going to definitely, if they can't knock off Carolina, I think they're definitely going to have to win that AQ to get into the NCAAs because the metrics, I think, just aren't going to be there with respect to RPI, strike the schedule, et cetera. So this is a huge game Saturday, Mikey Stadium. and should be a lot of fun. The game down in Chapel, this is the second year in a row that Army has played Carolina. And last year, I believe, was a 1-2 goal game won by the Black Knights. And that was a really, really good game. So this one will be, I think it's going to be just as good, if not better.
Big game in the Ivy League this week as number 4 ranked Princeton coming in the game 5-2 or 1-1 in Ivy League play will travel up to Hanover, New Hampshire to take on number 18th ranked Dartmouth Big Green 7-1 and undefeated in the Ivy League. This game's at noon on ESPN Plus. Before we talk about this game, let's bring in our guest this week, Dartmouth attackman Colin McGill. Please welcome into the show, senior standout from the Dartmouth Big Green, Colin McGill. Colin, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Colin, thanks for joining us. I know you're on spring break. Always a great time for a lacrosse player where you can almost feel like you're a professional athlete. You know, no classes, some extended time with the team. And you guys are off to a terrific start, 7-1 with a win over Penn this past weekend to go 1-0 in the Ivy League. But you've been around Dartmouth lacrosse now as a senior, so you've seen the other side of things where you guys haven't had a ton of success. What is the biggest difference this year compared to your first 3 years as a member of the Dartmouth lacrosse program?
I think the culture, I think there's been a big flip, especially with the new coaching staff, a bigger buy-in from the players for sure. And honestly, the schemes and stuff have gotten a lot better.
With respect to the 2025 season, you guys currently are 7-1. You start off the season with the win over Bucknell, then you drop a tough one to UMass, but you're currently on a 6-game winning streak. What has the mindset been during this successful stretch for you guys?
I mean, I think that loss to UMass just shows us that you can't just roll the balls out and win every week. So that it gave us a little fire, especially moving into practice for the next week. So I think, I mean, keeping up this good momentum is key.
You come to Dartmouth from Malvern Prep, a high school powerhouse, a team that is year in and year out, very competitive, produces a ton of college athletes. What went into the decision to go to Dartmouth?
Yeah, I think I fell in love with this place and the people on the visit, and I knew I wanted a rigorous academic school. So I think that's what drew me into Dartmouth.
So, Colin, staying on the Malvern Prep lacrosse a little bit. So, Malvern Prep started this season as the number one ranked team in high school lacrosse in the country. Got knocked off by a really good Calvert Hall team this week, but still number three in the latest rankings on Inside Lacrosse. But it's developed into this national power. Always has been good, but now it's national. What kind of pride do you feel when you see your old high school, your alma mater, ranked number one? First question. And the second part is, if you had to put together a Mount Rushmore of Malvern Prep lacrosse, who are some of the faces that would be on that?
Yeah, I think the same idea. It's all about culture, and that's definitely a winning culture. And I entered that team into a winning culture, so I can't say that I had the privilege of building it, but I definitely came into that culture, and winning games at Malvern is what it's all about. And I mean, we had great coaches. I was coached by John McAvoy, a Malvern legend, who would definitely be on my Mount Rushmore. And my offensive coordinator was Coach McCready's, Matt McCready's, who would also be on my Mount Rushmore. Those were both Malvern guys. Coach McCready's is a coach now, but I don't know. I think the tough loss to Calvert Hall is going to do the same thing that our loss did. I mean, they're gonna have a spark at practice this week. I know they have Taft today too, so hopefully they pull one out.
One of the assistant coaches at Malvern during your time was Will Hawes on the staff
He
when you were
was.
there?
Yeah, he was.
Coach Hawes now in Baltimore, the Baltimore area, coaching Loyola Dons, my alma mater and my kids' alma mater. So, any remembrances of Will Hawes helping you out?
Yeah, he's a grinder. He'd be out there before practice and after practice working on his own game because he was playing at the time when he coached me. Yeah, great
Right
guy.
on. Roll Don's roll. With regard to your season, any game, you mentioned the loss to UMass that kind of had you guys refocused, recalibrated. Which one of the wins has been the most impressive to you? And maybe one that you're like, okay, we are, I hate the term for real. Everybody asks about programs like Dartmouth that haven't had a great amount of success in the past. Now is Dartmouth for real? Is so and so for real? I hate that term. But is there a victory where you guys are like, okay, we've got something cooking here?
Yeah, I think the obvious answer would be Penn, but I would say Utah. That was a culture win. That was a win that had everyone in the locker room saying we're for real, and that gave us the confidence to go out there and beat Penn as well. Big one on Saturday against Princeton, but we got a lot of respect for them. So I mean, we're doing our preparation focused on us during spring break, but we're excited.
Colin, you've been the leader of the offense since your freshman year. You've led the team in goals scored, or you tied as a freshman and led the team the last 2 years. But you're not doing it by yourself. Who are some of the other players on the offense who have been shining this season and deserve a shout out?
I mean, there's a ton of guys. A couple of transfers we got. Thomas Power, obviously killing it this year at X. Will Stahl is another transfer we got who's killing it off the midfield. Hopper Zapatello, another fellow attackman. He's playing really well. We got a lot of freshmen who are getting time for us, and yeah, they're amazing. They're really good. So I think the depth is what making Dartmouth lacrosse better this year.
So I mentioned your scoring. You've scored 106 career goals. The Dartmouth school record is 139. You're 2 goals away from passing a few people and becoming the second all time. You've been there for 4 years. You've seen the program sort of emerge and pivot under new leadership. You still have a lot of games left to play, but when you think about your career and what that your place in the all-time Dartmouth scoring ranks will be, what kind of emotion does that stir?
It's obviously exciting, but I'm more focused on the team and winning games. I've had a lot of amazing players throwing me the ball over the last 4 years, so all the credit to them. But yeah, I'm focused on winning games this year in the in conference.
Alex Jesse, a freshman, you mentioned some of the freshmen or, reference freshmen helping you guys out, scored the game winner against Penn and has since gone viral for his celebration. Where did he pull that out of?
I honestly have no idea, but it was awesome. Yeah, they're stepping up big time. Alex Jesse and Ty Julian on the midfield. A little bit of Julian Navab as well. Yeah, they're playing great.
On the defensive end, Mason Morrill has been a star, and it's easy to, watch what a goalie does because they record stats and it's a really prominent position. Who are some of the other guys on the defensive end who have been leading the Dartmouth defense?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, number 19, Tom Gogan, his cause turnover machine. He's a real big leader down there, covering their top guy every week. Griff O'Neill doing well as well, along with Jesse Phelan. But I think again, another strength of that side of the ball is they've got old leadership down there at Close D, but they've got an old LSM, Joe Azelby, who's playing well, but they've also got a couple of young LSMs who are learning the ropes in Campbell Florence and Jack Maholland who are getting some serious time as well. So I think that's our strength. I mean, never getting tired really.
And not only that, you've got someone who we are very familiar with. He's been a guest on our show in the past, Ajax Zapatello, won Defenseman of the Year, first team All-American, and just got out of the college game. That's got to be a huge boost to your guys as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when he talks, people definitely listen. He knows what he's talking about, and he's definitely had a good impact on the defensive end.
Has the father has dad Zapatello brought the RV up to New Hampshire?
He has brought the RV.
So I have a question about you're from Philadelphia and the Philadelphia area, and certain hotbeds of lacrosse get a certain reputation. Baltimore might have one, Long Island. In your opinion, what's the scouting report on a Philadelphia lacrosse player?
Scouting report. I'm not sure about Philly in general, but I would say for Malvern, it was definitely ground balls and being gritty. We did 20 or 30 minutes of ground balls before we even did anything else at Malvern. So, definitely a big emphasis on ground balls.
Yeah, that speaks volumes. So that good answer to that question. Last question before we get into some quick hitters. You're playing the Princeton Tigers this week. Big game for both teams. You've had some time to prep for the game, watch them on film. What does Dartmouth need to do to get a win on Saturday?
Yeah, I think sticking to our plan. We got a lot of respect for them. They've got some great players, so I think sticking to the plan. We're talking about playing Dartmouth lacrosse, and that's what I think we need to do on Saturday to pull out a win.
All right, let's get into some more fun, quick hitting questions. Let's start with who's your favorite Philadelphia sports team?
The Eagles, for sure.
And who's the best Eagle of all time?
I'd say one of my favorites is newly retired Brandon Graham.
Best food in Hanover, New Hampshire.
I'd say sports bar called Dunks. They've got a good chicken sandwich.
Dartmouth has a robust athletic program when you're not playing lacrosse. Which Dartmouth team is your favorite to go watch play?
Men's hockey for sure. Had an awesome year. Tough loss in the playoffs.
If the guys are getting together and someone's got to do the cooking, who's the best chef on the Dartmouth lacrosse team?
Holden Beck, for
And
sure.
what's the specialty?
He makes a rack of lamb.
Oh,
Wow.
that is the most Ivy League answer we've ever had, Dix. Usually we get like burgers or maybe steak, but
Steak,
never a rack of lamb. I
steak.
love it. I love it. That is amazing. All right. And when you guys go on the road, what's your favorite spot for a team meal?
We stop at Vermont Country Deli when we're going through Vermont on our way down. So they've got some good sandwiches.
All right. If Dixie or I walk into the big green locker room, who's running the aux and what's playing before practice?
Two people come to mind, Jesse Phelan, and Thomas Power. You're definitely going to hear some Chris Stapleton, and some Tyler Childers.
Country theme. All right. Colin, thank you so much for your time today. Best of luck to you and your teammates this week and throughout the season. It's great having you.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast presented by Simplicity Group. Dixie, it's good to talk to Colin. And it's the first time we've had a big green player or coach on our podcast in the 8 years that we've been doing this. So it was really exciting to talk to him.
How about that? To the victors go the spoils. I think we've demonstrated over the years that we welcome everybody on this show. And you have some success, you're going to get noticed and you're going to get an invitation to join the D-Fly Dixie podcast. I know you were flipping back and forth on Sunday night, but I definitely gave love to our podcast referencing our conversation with Bobby Van Buren. The black belt, was along the black belt lines. But in any event, Dartmouth playing with a ton of confidence right now, going into Penn, knocking off the Quakers. A freshman scores the game winner in overtime. Mason Morrow played a terrific game between the pipes. And I watched a good part of that game. And this is a good team. This is a good group. So they're going to be a handful for Princeton, who's coming off of a huge win. What was it? What were we? Oh, we got a lot of compliments, by the way, on our vocals from last week. Me in
Yeah.
particular, for busting out the Jungle Love. Shout out Paco Roman, one of the parents of the Loyola Greyhounds. One of my son Matt's roommates, Diego, is a long stick, and Paco especially appreciated me doing the OEOEO. But in any event, both these teams playing with a ton of confidence. I think with the Dartmouth win over Penn, you're now kind of looking at the Quakers as being maybe on the outside looking in. Brown's a wild card. Yale has struggled as well. So now you're looking at a top four. And who would have thunk it at the beginning of the season? Cornell, Princeton, Dartmouth, Harvard seem to be the four with Brown again. I think Brown can play the spoiler. And I'm not discounting Penn. And I'm not discounting Yale, but I think what we've seen out of those teams, we see that they have some deficiencies that they might not be able to overcome. So this is a gigantic game, not only to keep Dartmouth in the mix, but also to get maybe a more favorable seeding for that Ivy League tournament. And look, Princeton, we talk about them every week, solid in the goal, solid on defense, dangerous on the offense. I like their midfield scoring. So I think this is going to come down to the moxie of Dartmouth. How do they handle the success and try to parlay that into another win?
Big Green will look to end a 9-game losing streak to Princeton on Saturday at noon. Catch that one on ESPN Plus. On ESPNU at noon, big ACC matchup. Number 11 ranked Duke and number 7 Notre Dame will tangle. Coming off a bye week, the Irish welcome Duke to Arlotta Stadium. Duke's looking to bounce back from a head scratching loss to Denver and end a 6-game winning streak by Notre Dame in this series. Duke has lost to the Fighting Irish twice in each of the last 3 years. This is a big one for both of these teams in their ACC opener.
Catch Chris Cotter and Paul Carpetier. They will have the call for Duke, Notre Dame. Notre Dame rested. They got a little bit of a break after their win over Michigan. Will that hurt or help them? Getting back to the Penn State Ohio State game from this past weekend, Penn State had about a 10-day break, and maybe they were a little rusty, got some guys back who had missed some time, and maybe they were a little off kilter. So it's the age-old argument. Does rest help you, or does it hurt you in terms of taking away rhythm, all that other kind of thing, momentum? But I think it'll be a good thing for the Fighting Irish. And Duke, that was not on my bingo card. Them losing to Denver, A, and then B, really being handled by the Pioneers. I guess nobody really got to see the game because it really wasn't accessible broadcast-wise very easily. But be that as it may, this is a Duke team that for weeks we've been saying, what's their identity? Who are they? I think Kevin Unterstein's done a really good job with their defense. Offensively, we've seen guys, McAdory and Sloat, Malivers there, but they just really haven't seemed to really put it together. And I think a lot of things were exposed by Denver. So this is a bounce back opportunity for the Blue Devils. And let's not forget, Notre Dame's dropped two out of the last three. They seem to get right with the win over Michigan. I love the adjustments. Will Devin McClain stay at attack? That's a question mark for me for Notre Dame. We'll see how this one plays out as ACC play really kicks off.
Big game at noon. All the big games are always at noon. And there's another one that you will be calling on the Big Ten Network. Number 6 Penn State will play in College Park against the number 2 ranked Maryland Terrapins, who fell last week. Both these teams coming off of a loss in this border war. Dixie, is there still a debate in this series about who's won more games? Are we still the
Oh,
record
yeah.
keeping back and forth of these two?
Yeah, that's still like the game notes haven't come out yet. I haven't gotten a hold of them, but I'm sure that, Penn State sees the series one way, Maryland sees it another. They just can't agree. They
Yeah.
agree to disagree on the history of the series.
Well, both of these teams coming to the game coming off losses. And another home team last week, the Blue Jays, who we'll talk about next, fell. Who would have guessed that the three Road Dogs would have gotten some pulled out wins last week in the Big Ten?
I mean, look, what I saw from Michigan against Notre Dame, I didn't think that they were going to beat Maryland, but give a lot of credit to the Wolverines. They played outstanding. And this is the fourth consecutive time Maryland has lost to Michigan, which is crazy, but that's the reality. So Maryland's going to be dialed in this week. They're going to be ready to play. Penn State's only beaten Maryland twice in the history of the series, and that came back. The first one was in 2019 at Maryland, and that was a loaded Penn State team that went to the national semifinals. The second time was last year in the Big Ten tournament in the semifinals, where Penn State ran the Terps off the field at Ohio State Lacrosse Stadium. So this one, you're looking at Penn State welcomed back back Kyle Lehman as well as Matt Trainer this past weekend, and they looked pretty good. I thought Trainer looked a little hesitant, honestly, but it was good to see him back on the field. Hunter Aquino has put together a tremendous freshman season so far for the Penn State Nittany Lions. He was held in check by Ohio State. So the Nittany Lions looking to rebound against a Maryland team that looked like the most complete team in college lacrosse. And I'm not saying they still aren't, but now they are no longer the number one team in the country. And this is a golden opportunity for them at home to get back on the winning track, on the winning edge of things. When you look at the goaltending for Maryland, it stays really, really strong. You know, I think Logan McNaney is having a terrific season. The one number that jumped off the page to me, now granted, this was three overtimes, but Maryland had 20 turnovers in that loss to Michigan. That is very un-Terrapin-like. Five of them came in the two, two, and one in the three overtime periods. And you got to give Hunter Taylor, the goaltender for Michigan, a ton of credit. He made some saves in overtime that were fantastic, two of which in the second overtime that kept the game going. So we'll see what Maryland comes up with in a game that is always very intense. And just look, two programs, just they don't like each other. There's no other way to put it. They don't like one another. So this will be a very physical game.
And we touched on a little bit, but number 14 ranked Johns Hopkins, they're 6-3 overall and lost their Big Ten opener last week to Rutgers. We'll play the number 19 ranked Michigan Wolverines, who are coming off that big win over Maryland. Blue Jays have had a lot of success historically against Michigan, winning 11 of 13. Hopkins won the regular season matchup last year, but the Wolverines got a leg up in the Big Ten tournament, knocking the Blue Jays out of that with a 10-7. A victory. How do you see this game playing out?
First of all, Hopkins losing at home to Rutgers. And it's interesting, you know, we talked about Michigan and Rutgers coming into Big Ten play without any big out of conference victories. So they have to have success in the Big Ten. Well, they took a step in the right direction. You know, game one out of five, they banked wins. I was not at this game, nor did I see much of it, but my phone was blowing up throughout this contest last Saturday, and people were incredibly emotional and very disappointed, particularly in the Blue Jay offense. This is, you got to try to bounce back if you're Hopkins. And Matt Cullison is a terrific player. I think he needs to step his game up a little bit. Logan Callahan at the faceoff has done a great job. He's going to have to get the Blue Jays possessions, but they're going to have to maybe, I don't say make changes, but do some different things to try to find more offensive productivity for that ball club. Michigan, wow. Again, just really impressed with them being able to come into College Park and get that W. Balanced scoring. Game winner scored by Nick Rude. And anybody that listens to me on the Big Ten Network, his father, Bobby Rude, professional wrestler. I loved him in TNA as part of Beer Money with James Storm. He then went to the WWE and became, I think, glorious or glorified Bobby Roode. I never really followed him because they kind of buried him. But shout out Nick Roode, Bobby Roode. Again, bucket list. Would love to meet you at one of the Michigan games coming up. I'll be out there April 6th, and I'll be back for the Big Ten tournament, just letting you know. So Michigan is going to need this balanced scoring. And I've been impressed the last couple of times I've been out to Michigan. They pack that place, and it's loud. And it is a fun environment. We'll see what the crowd looks like. I think you're going to have a lot on hand because when Hopkins comes down, everybody seems to take notice. So must win for the Blue Jays, and it'll be great for Michigan. To, you know, because you don't want to go down 0-2. You know, they typically say three wins get you into the Big Ten tournament. You go down 0-2 with, you know, Penn State, Maryland, and Ohio State still left on your docket. That's difficult. So we'll see how this one shakes out.
Yep, great slate of games. Make sure you clear that time frame between noon and say 3 o'clock, because that's when it's all going down for these five top 20 matchups on Saturday afternoon. All right, Dixie, it's time for the give and go. And Dixie, my mulch got delivered. It's mulching season in Maryland, Mid-Atlantic. It's gardening, landscaping season. Boy Scouts delivered my mulch last Saturday. They
The Boy
support.
Scouts? What?
Yeah, you get it from the Boy Scouts. You support the troop. It's
Okay.
something they do every year. And you put your order in. They bring it right to your house. Drop the bags off. You order. Tell them how many bags you want. You support them. I think it's a fundraiser for the Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to go pick it up yourself. And mulch is dirty and heavy and hard to get it in all into your car. I think I had 25 bags, so I got some mulching to do.
So
And
you do
it,
your own mulching.
I do.
Okay, so we just had ours done this week. We've been using the same person in his business for years. And the reason we use him is twofold. One, he's been great doing work at our house ever since we moved in for what we're going on, gosh, almost 20 years being in our house. And he delivers it and they do it. So in other words, we don't have to go out and get it. There's other people that use guys in the neighborhood, but they're responsible for getting the mulch and getting it to the house, and then the people lay it down. They do everything. They pick it up, they bring it, they clear everything out, they clean, and, take up all whatever the stuff, and then they put the mulch down. So our house is looking pretty on point if you want to
I
swing
bet
by and take a
I might
peek.
have to. I think there's nothing better than this time of year on like a freshly mulched landscape yard when the
Yeah.
flat like the daffodils are coming up and the mulch is like dark brown. And
Yeah.
I don't mind this. I've always said I really enjoy taking care of my own property, something I like take pride in. I
Yeah.
enjoy the task of like mowing grass, like any job that you have to do where
Oh, I mow my own grass.
where you
That's
can
for
like
sure.
see what you did and what you haven't done, like shoveling snow or like mowing lawns. I like doing that stuff. Mulching is fun. I hate the part I hate though. I don't mind spreading it. It's the when you have to like you don't even they, you know how they carve out like around the tree before they dump the mulch in?
Yeah.
That part where you have to like carve out the edges is the part that I don't like. Other than that, though, spreading it is fun, and I want to get my kids involved. They should have some responsibility in doing that kind of stuff. So I don't mind doing it. I can understand how you are very busy on the weekends in the spring, and you have been for many years. I have a little bit more flexibility, and I think this weekend is going to be some mulching time, some yard time.
Okay. Good for you.
So my question to you, a give and go question, is talked about. I got the daffodils popped up this week. Out of nowhere, there was just nothing. And now I have all these beautiful yellow flowers all over my yard and in the neighborhood and stuff. Do you have any favorite flowers? Any particular flowers that you like? We are, evolved men on this podcast. And I'll give you a ranking of mine. I'm gonna go daffodils first. It shows you that it's springtime, especially around here. Again, it's freezing cold one day and so it warms up a little bit, daffodils pop up, and then the rest of the leaves on the trees and everything starts to green up right in this mid-March to mid-April time. Then I'll go with the tulips. Then I'll go carnations. Love carnations as like a flower to, like decorate. And then I gotta say, if I had one more, go. I mean, everyone likes roses. It's too cliche. This area is famous for the cherry blossoms. I got this magnolia tree in my backyard that is just a beautiful tree. And I look out like my bedroom window, you can see you see the buds start popping, and also know that it's spring. So I'm gonna go with my last is the magnolias.
Well, I don't really have any favorite flowers, so that seems like a good place to stop. No, I'm not much of a green thumb, but I like sunflowers because that's my wife's favorite flower. So whenever I get her flowers, I'm always sure to include at least one, maybe more sunflowers in the bouquet.
They're big. Sunflowers are big,
They
right?
are, yeah. I love spring. When I was a kid, like my father, before my brother and I started mowing the lawn, he'd mow the lawn and like that first cut of the season. And it's like cool in the evening, but it's not cold. And I literally would go out and just like roll in the grass. Like it was cool, man. Like, and I cut my own grass, I rake my own leaves, I shovel my own snow. F the Columbia Association because they don't do any of that. I still have to pay those daggone dues. The biggest racket on the planet, Columbia Association.
Got
Hate
to take
those guys.
advantage of the open space.
Oh my God. We do take advantage of it, but they don't clear snow off of that either. And then they put you through, my wife and I had a lot of work done on the house over the summer. Then they rake you over the coals for what, like, they bust your chops on what you want to do, for
Got to get it all approved.
like, seriously? Come on. It's not like we're putting up purple siding or pink siding for crying out loud. We put up, anyway, don't get me going on those clowns. So in any event, other flowers that when we were at Hopkins, I just love the smell. I don't know what kind of flowers they were or buds on the trees, but remember in the spring, and it hit me harder because, we're starting practice in February when it was butt cold. And then when it gets warm, like, springtime at Hopkins, you got lacrosse and you've got the beach
Yeah, the
and
whole campus comes alive.
near Spring Fair, the Islander, all those kinds of things. But the smell was always of like freshness and flowers. And I don't know what kind of flowers they were, but I lived on St. Paul Street, and even down on St. Paul Street, it smelled good for a bit,
Yeah.
Cherry blossoms are awesome. I don't mind carnations. They're cool. Roses are always, to your point, they're cliche. I don't really, when I send my mom flowers or my wife flowers, very, if there's roses involved, there's one or two in the bouquet. What are you laughing at? You're like
I'm
dying
just
over
thinking
there.
of all the comments we're going to get for this conversation. And I love it. I welcome it. Bring it on.
Oh, well, I mean, we got both, lambasted as well as lauded for our cheese conversation a few
Know.
weeks ago.
I know. I'm going to hear about this
But
one,
that's what
but I
sets us
love
apart, I think. I mean,
it.
we're sitting here talking about lacrosse and replay and this, that, and the other thing. And then now we're talking about flowers, for crying out
Yeah, I
loud.
got one more. Azaleas. I have some azalea bushes in front of my house, and
Oh, yeah?
that's it's later in the spring, more like early May. But man, those things get going, and it's really an impressive thing and a beautiful thing. The guy who owned my house before I did was definitely a green thumb gardener, and he had a plan, or he and his wife had a plan that things pop up at different times. So year round, I have flowering plants basically in my yard. So the daffodils come up first, and there's a lot of them. And then it's the next thing, and then these trees on the side of my house, and then the magnolia tree, and then the azalea bushes. There's like a butterfly bush in my front yard. So the guy he had a real acumen for it, and makes my yard look great year round. I try not to mess it up by pruning or destroying stuff. But I do my best to keep it going. But I got to give props to the couple that I bought our house from.
Yeah, when we moved in, our house was a little bit of a disaster in that area. So we had everything ripped out and landscaped, and then through the years we've also made improvements like walkways, a back patio. We had a deck put on. The house didn't have a deck
Did you have the
when we
CA
moved.
approve that?
Oh yeah. Yeah, SCA approved it. Yeah, of course. And like literally, somebody from Howard County, it was cool. Like, he just comes to the house and just like, because I guess they have to approve when the holes are dug for the stuff to be put in. So the guys have to like dig the holes, and then the people from, Howard County come out, look at the holes. And they're like, yeah, it looks good. Okay, they could proceed. And you're like, really? I don't know, man. It's just.
Oh, it's so funny. So there's a squabble in my neighborhood. So my neighbor last spring was started building a deck in like March. And they took their old deck out and put a new deck. We're putting up a new deck. And all of a sudden, work just stopped on this person's deck for like 6 weeks. Well, it
Oh.
turns out that neighbor had a little squabble with a different neighbor, and the neighbor made a phone call and someone came out to inspect and shut down the deck building until
Really?
proper permits were pulled. I was like, that is stone cold.
So that's really weird because in order to submit to the CA, and you're part of CA, I
Yeah,
assume,
sure.
right? Yeah.
And
In
CA
order to
is
submit,
where we live in the town of Columbia. It's actually can be a cool thing. The Columbia Association is like the citywide homeowners association. They're almost like the government of our
They
unincorporated town.
stuck.
But
They stuck.
they control all the open space and take care of a lot of land. They're the largest landowners in Howard County, and they also separately own all the swimming pool, the outdoor swimming pools, three gyms, got a couple golf courses, and some other amenities and facilities that you can have like a very cheap membership to. So they're good and bad. They're like this powerful entity that a lot of people complain about for good reason. But the goal of it is, to like help keep some consistency and keep property values up. So everything has to be approved. So I had to give a little background on that.
And my our dues don't get us access to the gyms, don't get us access to the pool. You got to pay on top of that.
Correct.
It's straight up extortion, man. Straight up. And I live in Ellicott City. And I still have to pay Columbia State. Their reach is in different zip codes, not just Columbia. I can't stand it. But in any event, in order to submit a proposal for work to be done on your house, you have to get neighbors to sign off. I think it's at least one, maybe two, that you let them know, hey, we're doing this work. This is what it's going to look like, blah, blah, blah. Will you? And they're like, yeah, sure. Like neighbors across the street from us years ago, and they don't live there anymore. Paint wanted to paint their door. And it's a butt ugly color, honestly. But we're not going to stop anyone from doing what they want to do. It's fine. Not something we would have done, but we're not going to get in the way of other people, doing what they want to do to their house within reason. I mean, obviously, if they wanted to paint it, purple and pink polka dot, we would have been like, yeah, probably want to rethink that. But yeah, so I'm just surprised because neighbors would have had to have signed off on that, but maybe,
Well, not
the
necessarily.
Hatfields didn't know the McCoys were putting up the deck and
So the neighbors don't have to sign off on it. The proper approach is you submit it to the Architectural Planning Committee, who is a like a elected
right, but
group,
first
who then
step is
has
you get
to
buy-in
approve it.
from your neighbors.
Yeah, well, they didn't
First
ask
step is,
me, but I
yeah.
wouldn't have cared. Again, it wasn't a new deck; it was replacing old one. There's a famous story: James Rouse, who was the master developer and
Yeah.
visionary behind Columbia, that one of the first planning
Great
communities in
man.
the United States. Great man, one of my heroes. He got fined. He painted his front door. He painted his front door yellow and got fined for it. And he was in charge of the whole, Rouse Company and like basically created Columbia. So even he was a victim of the CA and its
We have
iron
neighbors.
claw.
We have neighbors who have been told not to do this, not to do that, and they do it anyway. And the CA is like, if you do that, we're going to make you. And they're like, okay, go ahead and try. And I, to this day, no one has been rung up on that front. And then the other one is like, they're like, yeah, we're going to fine you if you do that. They're like, fine, do it. And they have fined them, and people gladly pay it. They're like, as long as I get what I want, and it's not incredible. And neighbors, for the most part, are like, yeah, that's ridiculous. But it
Yeah.
sounds like you got a real brouhaha on your hands
No,
over it.
it got settled. The deck's been built. It's really
Okay.
nice and it looks great. But it was crazy that I didn't understand why it had just stopped for like 6 weeks or something like that. And then it was in the middle of the summer by the time it got completed. All right, that seems like a good place to stop. Thanks again to our guest, Colin McGill, the Dartmouth Big Green. A reminder that the Flying Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. If you enjoyed this episode and like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app. Hit subscribe, leave a review, tell a friend, share the love. It's free. We'll always love to hear from you. And I imagine we will after this episode. Feel free to email us at dflyanddixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the games. Noon, 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 and 1 p.m.
Yeah, how about that?